So I keep running into Jesse Jackson. It started, yeah, I know, Bob's like, what? That's weird. It is. So, right, he spoke, it's coming all down to Jesse Jackson these days for me. But it started years and years ago. So I grew up in Portland, and when I was in high school, I would fly to New York City to see my sister who was in college. And inevitably, I'd be flying from Portland to New York, and I'd have a layover at O'Hare, or I'd have to switch planes, and there Jesse would be. He'd either be walking through the terminal or getting onto my plane, and he's very tall. He's very tall and has just amazing charisma, even if he's just talking to the other people in his entourage who are also very tall and have a lot of charisma. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, there's Jesse Jackson. I probably was aware that he ran for president, but mostly what I knew is that he was a famous black preacher. So there's a famous black preacher. I don't think it was until I was maybe even 30 that I put together, that's the same guy standing next to Dr. King when he got murdered. That guy is that guy in these old-timey black and white photos. That's the same person walking around here today. Now, then I started running into him more intentionally when I went to seminary, because it turns out we went to the same seminary. He also earned a Master of Divinity from Chicago Theological. And so when I was a student there, I would go hear his talks because he was there with Dr. King. Last year, he was honored with other alumnus at the annual conference at CTS because they were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the March on Selma. This year at the annual conference that I was at just 2 weeks ago, the theme was loosely about the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's Chicago Freedom Movement. And so the conference started out with these amazing speakers who were there with him in Chicago, who helped found the Southern Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, people from back in the day who've had these amazing lives. But then we also had speakers from Black Lives Matter and the Movement for Black Lives. On Saturday morning, we started with this extraordinary panel about racism and Islam with Muslim scholars from the U.S. and the United Kingdom. I mean, this was a broad look at the intersection of activism and race and religion in America today. Our final speaker was supposed to be the sociologist Michael Eric Dyson, who you might have seen on PBS and a variety of other places. And I was really looking forward to that. I have a sociology background. He's a terrific speaker. But frankly, by the end of Saturday afternoon, I was kind of tired of sitting in uncomfortable church chairs. You may be familiar with that experience. And the vegan lunch just did not satisfy. So I was hungry and crabby, and I went into the main chapel, and I thought, okay, this will be great to hear Michael Eric Dyson. Great conference, glad I'm here. Found some friends, sat down, looked around. I was like, oh, well, there's Jesse Jackson. No surprise. He's always around. But he wasn't a scheduled guest, and he wasn't a scheduled speaker, so it was a surprise when Dyson decided to just forego his keynote altogether and have an impromptu dialogue with Reverend Jackson. And they covered a lot of ground in that 1 hour, as you can imagine. They talked about the past and they talked about the present. And one thing that Reverend Jackson said stayed in my mind as I prepared for worship today. He reminded us that Jesus didn't get in trouble because he prayed and he sang. He got in trouble because he confronted Rome and the people who worked for Rome. So by extension, it is not in our worship and prayer and song that we demonstrate our commitment to the way of Jesus, but in our willingness to act, to go out in the world and to act. This is not an original theological claim on Jesse Jackson's part. Just look at what we heard today in our readings with Paul. So first we have this little snippet from the Acts of the Apostles to remind us what's happening. Paul has gone to Greece, and he's traveling between communities to try to start Christian communities. He's gone from Athens to Corinth and on. And we know that he stays in touch with these communities after he's gone because we have letters. So the second thing that Kevin read was the first letter of Paul to the Corinthians, the small church community in Corinth. And he is very direct in his message to them. Stop fighting. Be unified. Let go your factions and your denominationalism. This faith is not about the apostles and the disciples. The living Christ did not send me to build a church through ritual. The living Christ did not send me to build a church through ritual, but to rebuild the world through His good news. So I see a lot of good news rebuilding here at Ames United Church of Christ. I see it in the way that we nurture our children to be affirmed for who they are, respected, to learn how to respect others. I see it in the way we volunteer at Food at First to literally help feed people. And most particularly in these last 6 months, we've done some amazing good news rebuilding in the generosity of our financial gifts in the community that are part of our 150th capital campaign. $22,000 for a van for primary health care, $13,000 to Food at First for a dishwasher, and we're getting closer to making a gift to Habitat for Humanity of $40,000. That is some real rebuilding. That is some literal building of one family's life, inspired as we are by the good news. But the National Church, the National United Church of Christ, wants us to think a little more broadly today about what it means to rebuild the world, to look at our foundation, our literal foundation, the earth we walk on. And so you heard it in the opening prayers of my time with the kids, and you saw on the cover of the bulletin this picture of a power plant. And it says, keep it in the ground. It's not a subtle message. Keep it in the ground. We are one of hundreds, if not thousands, of churches today who are participating in a conversation about fossil fuels and global climate change. Here's what the website about the event reads. Arguably, the most important act of caring for God's creation that our society can undertake today is to keep most of the world's fossil fuel reserves in the ground. If humanity fails at this mandate prescribed by the laws of physics, then our planet will enter into the red alert danger zone as it overheats due to the damage done to our climate. So for the record, those two sentences make me want to run out here right now, leave this sanctuary and get into my bed and put my blanket over my head. Because there is nothing that fills me with more despair and defeatism than what is happening to our planet. I just read in the paper this morning that 300 million people in India are at risk of death to heat wave, directly connected to global climate change. 300 million vulnerable people who cannot get to cooling centers or have water. I give up. I mean, you want to confront me with poverty and racism? I've got an analysis, and I've got an answer, and I've got a solution. But if you want to talk about the weather, I have nothing. Fortunately, the United Church of Christ saw me and my fears coming their way. So rather than just invite us preachers to raise awareness and our own blood pressure, they want to encourage us to do one discreet and easy thing. And that is sign a petition. Sign a petition online to the president. That petition reads, President Obama, we call on you to secure your climate legacy by halting all new drilling, fracking, and mining on public lands and waters, including stopping all new offshore drilling in the Arctic, Gulf of Mexico, and the Atlantic. That's it. It's very easy. The link is on our Facebook page. It'll be in your e-blast. It'll be in your bulletin next week. It'll be all over for you to sign this petition. And as you heard Jeremy describe this morning, our social justice and outreach green team also has ways, practical ways, accessible ways for us to do our part to make sure that we don't have an environmental Jenga for the next generation. There are the recycling bins for batteries and light bulbs out there. Thursday night, viewing of the movie. And next Saturday, participating in Stash the Trash, which is an Ames citywide opportunity. Again, easy. You don't have to do it alone. You can be part of the solution. I want to invite you, though, to do one other thing that is less easy. On Saturday, May 14th, from 9 a.m. to noon, Liz Hall, the lead organizer of AMIS, a Mid-Iowa organizing strategy, will be here to offer us basic training in relational community organizing. What is that and what does it do? So this technique was initially developed by Saul Alinsky in the 1920s in Chicago, and it was innovative in that Alinsky brought together individual conversation and alliances across apparent differences. In his initial case, it was bringing together the Roman Catholic Church and labor unions together in order to achieve a shared goal, which was decent employment conditions. It has been used ever since internationally, both at organizations like AMIS, which is part of a national network, the Gamaliel Foundation, and PICO, among many others. President Obama, it's what he was doing. When we hear about him being a community organizer, this is what he was doing. I first took this training in 2003, and I give it almost all of the credit for the successes I then had in nonprofit work and the ability to raise millions of dollars for low-income housing. And I give it a lot of credit for my work in ministry, including the call to be your pastor 2 years ago on Tuesday. And it's the only method or model or scheme that I have seen to actually work in keeping congregations and churches healthy and resilient in a marketplace, a religious marketplace that demands relevance and accountability. So what is it? It's simple. Know yourself, know other people, do an analysis of the powers and players at hand, and then find an issue you can actually take action on. No petitions, no protests. What can you actually act on? The reason that I'm now the co-chair of the Story County Housing Trust Fund Task Force is because people like our own Jan Flora, wave to the people, Jan. He doesn't want to. Because our own Jan Flora and organizers like him in Amos use this technique. If we have more affordable housing in Story County in 18 months, it is because of what Liz will teach us here on May 14th. That's powerful. So Jesse Jackson wasn't saying anything new when he spoke at CTS last week. He was just echoing what Paul had said so long ago. Church is not the goal of the good news. This right here is not Jesus' goal. Church is not the goal of the good news, but what the church will do. Jesus got in trouble with the law because he got into trouble. He went into the public square and he messed around with public systems. Feeding the multitude once might be an accident, but doing it twice, that is an action. So recycle, come see the movie to get more informed, participate in the trash event, clean up our community, and then register for and attend the May 14th training. Whatever is pulling at your heartstrings, whatever keeps you up at night, be it the environment, child poverty, trans rights, whatever it is, God is pulling all of us out of these pews. Let's not come to church just to run into Jesus, but let's learn together how we can run with Jesus. Amen.